Hello and welcome to Surveyor Says, the podcast from the National Society of Professional Surveyors. Each week, we bring you fascinating guests that are involved in the profession of surveying. We cover a lot of ground, including table lay talk with Gary Kent, point of order with the NSPS Joint Government Affairs team, future focus, highlighting current and future leaders of the profession, and everything survey related in between. Thanks for joining us here on the podcast and hope you enjoy listening to this episode of Surveyor Says.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Surveyor Says. Tonight, I'm filling in for Kurt Sumner. This is Tim Birch, President-elect of NSPS, and I have a very special guest with me tonight. I say that because he thinks he's special. He is a special guy, and I've gotten to know Mr. Griffin over the last few months, crossing paths on a few things. You're going to hear a different perspective on this because he's looking from the licensing board side, from almost an outsider's view. So I'd like to introduce Mr. Griffin Pritchard from the Alabama Board of Licensure. Griffin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, like I said, my name is Griffin Pritchard. I have 5 years with the Alabama Board. I'm not a surveyor. I'm not an engineer. I've got 20 plus years in the newspaper industry. I come from a media background. I am also the public information officer. So it's my job to be the mouthpiece for Bells and for the profession within the state of Alabama. And having that background of media, of not being in the profession, gives me a unique perspective, which helps me do my job and also helps promote our profession and promote our board.
So I got to ask, how does one get involved with the licensing board in Alabama? What path did you take to eventually end up where you are now?
So I got burned out doing newspaper stuff. Was editor of a small town weekly, just got really burned out with it. People in my ear kept saying, hey, you need to get a job with the state. So interviewed for a communications position at ALDOT, Department of Transportation, and was in the top five on their list, but was not in the top two. My name went back in the public information pool, and I got a card saying, hey, you have an interview with the Alabama Board of Licensure for Professional Engineers and Land Surveyors. And my first thought was, huh, I didn't know we had one of those. Then I decided that, you know, I'm going to go to the interview. They're creating a marketing position, and the beauty of my position is the fact that no one else has had it before. I am the first. So it's good that I'm shaping the message and shaping the position each day, but it's kind of bad in the fact that if I screw up and do something wrong, I don't have somebody else to blame it on.
Right.
You know, in most state jobs, you're either replacing somebody who's retiring or fired. I have the weird, you know, opportunity to come in as the anomaly is, you know, this is brand new. And with that, I have a really good director and have a really good board who has given me the space to create and to shape our message and shape our conversation from event to event, from year to year.
So when you first started, I mean, how much did you know about, in this case, engineering and surveying, especially the surveying side? I mean, What was a surveyor to you? Did you have any idea?
I had an idea what a surveyor was because I helped my dad do it. My dad's not a surveyor. My dad is kind of the jack of all trades type guy.
Sure.
He used to build houses. He worked in a boiler room at Russell Mills. I mean, he's one of these guys that he can create something. But I mean, he would come home one day with a total station and a pole and said, "Hey, walk down into the driveway. I need to figure out the slope." So
sure.
I literally walked down there and held the thing while he measured.
Nice.
And then, you know, I mean, that was it. But coming into the profession, there was so much to learn. Like ASPLS, it took me forever to get those initials because I could never get it right. It took me forever to get the name of our board right because it's just so long. That's why we started calling it Bells, because it's much shorter and rolls off the tongue easier, plus a lot easier to market. But it took me about 3 years to get really comfortable speaking in front of a crowd at length about the tenets of the profession, be it surveying or engineering.
Okay. Well, because I tell you what, and like I said, we've just gotten to know each other the last several months, and you know, 50 states, I mean, a lot of state affiliates, a lot of state boards. I've seen a few reports out of some of these states, both the affiliates and the boards. I mean, I'm used to my home state here of Illinois and seeing the board report, and it's maybe a couple of pages, whatever. And so you turned me on to the report from Alabama, the Standard, and I recommend anybody that wants to get an idea of what's going on, especially in the southern part of the country. And yeah, sure, there's a couple of pages of advertisements and such, but 32 pages. Wow. I mean, that's a lot of content. And I'm blown away at the amount of information and the representation that you've so well written in this issue, in all issues, that I guess without having that surveying and engineering background, it's amazing, and I appreciate where you've come from to be able to write about this stuff.
It's kind of cool. It's been an evolution because it went from just a simple like 8-page, you know, standard state agency newsletter to then me trying to put my spin on it until finally having the conversation of, hey, I think we've evolved to the point where I want to turn our newsletter into a magazine. I don't want us to present ourselves as a state agency. I want us to market ourselves as if we were a business. And how would a business market itself? And then having my background, it's simple just look through research and find things that fascinate me.
You bet.
You know, the idea of women surveyors, which I think is what we're going to get into next. The idea of women surveyors is, you know, I sit in my director's office and we have this conversation of we need to have something about surveyors in the next magazine. And we tried to, the idea of women in the profession came up, and then it was trying to figure out who we knew, and we couldn't name one in the state of Alabama. And it turns out, you know, since we don't ask the sex question on our application,
right,
you're basically going by like names, and you're like, well, this sounds feminine and this sounds feminine. And so you figure out between 12 and 20. And if you're a male with the feminine sounding name, I'm sorry, you're counted in that 12 to 20.
Exactly.
But you know, you're trying to figure it out. And then, you know, you pitch the idea to like National Council, and Maria does a really good job of saying, well, we don't really do that, but I know some folks that do. And then it just kind of evolves from there.
Exactly. And that's, well, and actually that's exactly how we got an acquaintance. Was you were reaching out, trying to find female surveyors on a nationwide scale. And there's a few out there. Actually, we've got two on our officers board here at NSPS, our immediate past president, Lisa Van Horn, and our vice president, Amanda Allred from Washington State. Yeah, that's just two examples, but unless you're looking for those, you're right. It's kind of hard. So tell me about some of the research you did. I mean, what steps did you take to go digging in for this article on women in survey?
Well, it was, I put it out on our social media, which is where I put out everything first. Let me plug our Facebook page. The Alabama Board has a Facebook page. It's grown from 55 likes to well over 600 in the 5 years I've been there. I also do a Facebook Live every Thursday from at 9:05-ish. Sometimes it's 9:05, sometimes it's 9:10, sometimes it's, you know, in there. But I put that out there first, and then I sent a message to the ASPLS director, who is really good to work with and helps me out a lot, and said, hey, basically, this is what I'm working on. I'm looking for female surveyors in Alabama. Can you help me out? The thing that surprised me was the fact that I had two students reach out to me. One of them is in the works as an intern for the ASPLS president, and the other one was a Troy student. Now, she didn't get back with me. The Troy student didn't get back with me for the story, but the intern did, and it was a great getting her perspective. And then with the help of NCs and the help of you guys and the help of Ana Rios, was able to put me in touch with some different folks. The cool thing was that I was able to talk to the first professionally licensed surveyor in Alabama. female surveyor in Alabama.
Very cool.
And she gave me some great insight into like her profession and her journey. And then Lisa too, Van Horn gave me great insight into her journey, especially, you know, a different perspective from a different part of the world.
Right. Right. Yeah. And yeah, it's fun to listen to Lisa's story because she has been around long enough and she went through a different part of the surveying with the county surveyors in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. That yeah, it's a different story, and it's a good story. It's amazing, and because of the uniqueness of women in surveying, almost every one of their stories are unique, and they're great stories to hear. That's a good thing. You know, a shout out there to Anna Rios as well. I'm glad you had a chance to talk to her. She was one of my earlier podcast guests, fantastic lady, she is the chief motivation officer of her company. Mm-hmm. And she is definitely that. It's great to see her coming around even more full circle. And I hope that, she's able to push the Future Surveyors Foundation and the women in surveying, that much more. So shout out to you, Anna, wherever you there in Texas.
Yeah, Anna in Texas did a fantastic job of actually helping me figure out how to count the number of female surveyors in the state.
Nice.
Because that's what she did in Texas, and I realized that is a monumentous undertaking because God knows there's a lot of folks in Texas.
Yes, there is. And, you know, and it's interesting now, you know, we're talking about the profession itself and the just kind of the broad picture of it. And yes, it's stereotypically been white male for so long. And we now try to look at the roster of surveyors in each state. And you're right, Marissa from NCWS. We've had several conversations that, you know, unfortunately, I don't know if it's just one of those HR things or whatever, but that's never been something that's really been asked during licensure is male, female, age, race, what are you? Because it's just been surveyors. And now it would be nice to know what kind of a breakdown do we have as male and female? Any kind of a race breakdown and an age breakdown of who we are. And it's been a little bit of a puzzle trying to figure that out of where we are with our demographics as of surveying. So you've got a little bit of an inside track there because you've got the list of licenses that you can work with. So that's always a nice one. I want to split off just a little bit and also then talk about dealing with trying to figure out the minority side of surveying, especially you're there in the South. I mean, what kind of breakdown is there in with different minorities in surveying? Because you know, that's something I'm up here in the Chicago area and I know several females around the state. I know a couple of Hispanic surveyors. I do not know of a black surveyor in the state of Illinois, and there may be one. I just personally don't know that. And so I'm a little disappointed that I can't name within the 800 surveyors within Illinois that this is a black surveyor, male or female. So I'm just curious what it's like in the South.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In the professional dealings I've had, it's you see one or two, and then you see, you know, you're Latino, and you see that. But then you go down to the college level, and you see, like, the whole melting pot on the college level. Now, if that translates to the professional ranks, we're going to be okay.
That's
because
good.
you're going to get out of that familial, I don't want to say complex, but you get out of that familial push and you start seeing new people come in that are new eyes, new ears. And inadvertently, I found the first black surveyor in Alabama. Right after we went back to work from the lockdown, I got an email asking to research this gentleman. I think his last name was Bell, who happened to go to Tuskegee He was part of George Washington Carver's class, which, you know, I know for those listening outside of the state of Alabama, don't really, can't really contextualize that. But, you know, George Washington Carver was a very, very brilliant man who did a lot of things for the African-American community in the state of Alabama and nationally too. But so I get this email from this guy and start looking him up, and you figure out that he graduated in the 30s. No, he was born in the 20s, graduated college in the 40s, somewhere in there. And you start looking at minutes from meetings. You know, our board was founded in 1935, something like that. So you start looking at minutes from the meetings, and you just keep going forward until you see this guy's name appear. And it was at like the 1953, 1954 meeting that this guy's name appears as licensed. Okay, so you look at his name and the date of the meeting, and you look at it in terms of where we were in the civil rights movement.
Exactly.
So, you know, this guy's getting licensed as a professional surveyor in the mid-50s, which would make him one of, if not the first black surveyor in Alabama. Now, Levi Green, who is a professional in North Alabama, who helps me out a lot, was doing a historical thing trying to find that thing. So we're working on the same project without knowing it.
Wow.
So I send him an email and just say, hey, this is what I found. What do you have? Turns out that this guy I found predates what he had by about 20 years.
Oh, boy.
So the ball goes to his court. He reaches out to the family. They find the guy's grave, and he is going to get final point designation as the first black surveyor in Alabama.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's great. Yeah, and
it's a long way around telling a story.
Oh no, no, that's fantastic. I mean, I like that because, and unfortunately, we don't know, people don't know enough about the final point program through NSPS and the foundation to be able to look into that, and let's honor our past surveyors with a monument, and that's I'm so impressed that that's going to be done, and that's just. That's something we've got to look back in our heritage and be able to really, really, really honor.
Yeah, the final point designation is probably, you know, there are two cool things, or there's a lot of cool things, but off the top of my head, the two cool things that I really like about working with surveyors, engineers, is learning about the final point designation. I mean, it's the perfect way to recognize and memorialize a surveyor. And then the Order of the Engineer, which is a great way to introduce a professional engineer into the profession and teach them about their obligation and the way they shape society.
Sure, sure. Well, another thing I noticed, and it was another great topic within your magazine. It really looks like Alabama is embracing STEM awareness and being able to really push the whole concept of STEM into the community and to embrace the technology of it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Governor Ivey, during her State of the State address in 19, said that she was going to make a STEM high school in the Huntsville area. Now, Huntsville is one of the growing areas of the state in terms of computer sciences, all that kind of stuff, because of, you know, Redstone Arsenal, Department of Defense. It's the military hub of Alabama, right, and of the nation, or of this part of the nation. And it makes sense that she's going to put a college there or put a high school there that focuses on that. And it, you know, we have a high school dedicated to the arts and sciences. And then we have to the arts, which is in Birmingham. Then we have one dedicated to math, which is in the Mobile area. So this is a great push to guide kids toward that. And now we have the creation of the STEM Council, which is a fantastic way to push STEM, the STEM concepts on the elementary level in a way that it's not like shoving it down your throat, in a way where it's looking at things that you would normally not think of as falling into those categories, but all of a sudden they are. And now when kids graduate, they will be more prepared than ever to go into those fields.
Exactly. You know, and I'm looking through the list of the people that are on that council, and it's, just looking at the companies they represent and the organizations they represent, it's really a who's who in Alabama with,
it
with
is.
A lot
it
of
is.
These.
Yeah, it's the 40 great minds that represent either the professional side, the educational side, or the administrative side. And, you know, if they can get it rolling, I realize we're like in this Frankenstein of a year. So,
yes,
you know, it may not get rolling immediately because who knows what's going to happen. And at the end of the year, it could turn into like, instead of ending at like 12/31, 2020, it could end up being like 13/1, 2020 and just keep on going. But if those folks can get the ball rolling and can get to a consensus of what this is going to look like, it will be fantastic for the kids. And it'll be fantastic for the educators on the college level too, because now you have these educated youth moving into the ranks already having a fundamental background.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And to have that that type of a group that's just making that push within the educational ranks is just fantastic. And I guess this is something, you know, this is something that was thrown at me a month or two ago, talking about getting more kids into the STEM type of curriculums. It's so expensive to go to college these days. And I've got she's now 24. She just got through college the last couple of years. And yes, it's expensive to go. And there's just this big push. You know, you really almost have to go to get anywhere. Anyway, that being said, I guess through a program like this, the concept I wanted to throw out there for you, just for conversation-wise, is student loan forgiveness. And if they would get through a program, do you see any way that a group like that could, you know, maybe even consider somebody that reaches that's able to graduate from a STEM curriculum? Maybe we could figure out how to help pay for some of their college.
You know, college is way overpriced to begin with. Yeah, for instance, I had a friend of mine was going to Birmingham Southern, which is one of the private colleges in the state, and a semester was roughly the cost of a Volkswagen Bug. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, every time we would go down the interstate and pass one, her dad would say, "Hey, look, there goes another year." I think student loan forgiveness is a great idea, and I think it would be an incentive to get kids within those programs. I know, like, architects' boards across the state have mechanisms to where they fund the colleges. So I know ours gives money to Tuskegee, gives money to Auburn and Alabama. I think Alabama. I know Tuskegee and Auburn for sure, to fund the program and to offer scholarships. And I think if maybe – I don't know if the boards could do it, but if maybe the professionals, some of the larger companies like your Boeings, your ThyssenKrupps, your car manufacturers,
right,
could get behind and say, "Hey, we're going to secure these 10 scholarships for these 10 students, provided they meet this certain criteria and want to go into this field." You know, for the car manufacturers, it would be, okay, so you want to be a assembly engineer, an industrial engineer. Okay, well, this is where you need, this is the track you have to take to get the scholarship. You know, Boeing would be, okay, so you want to be an aeronautics engineer. Well, here's your path. So there are options out there. It's just getting it done, getting the right people on board to do it.
Right.
And that's what it is. It's like, it's getting the right people in the right room to have the right conversation.
Sure. Sure. Well, I guess pushing that a little bit forward and really coming back to the promotion of engineering and surveying, especially from somebody from your position, from the board, where do you see we can do a better job? How do we promote both engineering and surveying, specifically surveying, better to where we can be a little more, we can look at diversity. Bottom line is we are a shrinking profession. We need more people. We need more good people. How do we do that?
Well, you know, you talk about being a shrinking profession, but the jobs are there. For instance, 2 years ago, I went to the Montgomery Home and Garden Expo. Just first time we're going to go to it and see what happens. And 3 days there, I had 22 conversations with folks who own property in various counties throughout the northern part of the state who needed it surveyed, realtors who needed a subdivision subdivided, you know. And then you hear the horrible stories of folks who went with like Al's Auto Garage and surveying.
Yes.
And find out like it wasn't done properly. Well, of course not. It's not done properly. You went with a guy who's a mechanic who just has a ruler.
Right.
So, you know, the job is there. Now, how do you promote that? It's the change the perception of the job. It's to get out of the mindset of old guys walking through the woods carrying a total station and a measurement, you know.
Right. Right.
You have to change that concept. If you look, you have drone uses. I'm sorry, unmanned aeronautical vehicles. I think it's what it's called, UAVs.
UAVs.
Drones for short. You have drone usage that is amazing to watch. And the tech there surpasses engineering in what surveyors are doing with it. You have GIS. You have LIDAR. And you have all these different mapping softwares that if that's your thing, it's a really good thing to get into because you have the opportunity to shape the state, to shape the future. You know, in one of my presentations, I look at the future of engineering and the top jobs of the future. And, you know, one of the jobs that's always going to be there is civil. Well, one of the precursors to the civil getting involved is the surveyor because the surveyor marks off what the civil works with.
Right.
So, you know, as long as people are building stuff, as long as society is moving, you're going to need a surveyor. Now, present it as a new field, present it as a new technology, and that way you're going to get more folks on board.
Well, you hope so. You know, and that's one thing that you're going to hear more of is, I mean, it's one thing the cell phones anyway that we start with. For those who don't know, the new iPhone 12 Pros has built-in LIDAR capabilities in the camera, and they're building apps as we speak to do small scanning jobs basically from your phone. It's going to revolutionize what we do on a small scale. Besides the fact that the GPS is getting better, now you're going to throw in some scanning. I mean, it's the tools and the technology is getting more mainstream. So yeah, the technology is coming to us, passing us by, and it's something that we got to be able to stay on top of. So I appreciate your words on how we can better promote because it's going to take a huge effort on a lot of people's parts to, like you said, the jobs are there. We will always have engineering. We will always have surveying. And bottom line is we got to have people to fill those roles. I appreciate the points there. So anything else from the board perspective that you'd like to share with the surveying public?
It's really interesting working for a licensing board. You know, I came from the newspaper industry, and from my aspect of it, there's no push to get a college education. There's no push to get an advanced college degree. There's no need to continue learning. And then on top of that, there's no type of licensing. Like you are a journalist. You can't be a professional journalist like you are a professional land surveyor.
Sure.
You can't have adding professional to your job title gives you instant credibility. You know, I have to say I have 20 years in the newspaper industry just to get name recognition. But coming and working for a board that does that, it's really cool to see the folks in the profession, how dearly the folks hold those letters and how hard they work to achieve them. And it's the conversation you have every 2 years when it comes to renewal. Somebody's talking about retiring we do a biennial renewal, and the conversation is, well, you have your license for two more years. Why don't you hang on to it? It's not going to cost you anything more. I mean, you've already renewed.
Right.
So just, you know, at the end of the, you know, we renew every odd year. So at the end of the odd year, just let it die, or either retire and take your letters with you.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of cool to see that. It's kind of cool to see some of the things that we have working. We're talking about possibly making a separate structural designation. So it'd be a PE structural. We're also not moving our certificates of authorization, which is our license. Well, I don't want to say license, but it's our designation to be able to practice the professions in Alabama, to a 2-year renewal, just like our individual, to make it kind of easier.
Okay.
And to, you know, reduce the headaches of the out of state folks who call on a regular basis asking, hey, do I need to renew? Do I need to renew? Am I good? Have I expired? Am I good?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, fella, you're good. When did you renew? I renewed in 19. Okay. You're good to 21.
Yep. Exactly. So we're still, we're trying to get ourselves through well, hopefully not another wave of the pandemic. What's the Alabama board looking forward to for 2021 besides some normalcy?
Normalcy is the key thing for me. It's going to be getting out and doing my outreach again. You know, outreach is such a strong part of communicating with the community, getting the community involved in what you're doing. You know, 19, I had 50 something dates that I was in and around the state. This year I've had maybe 10 Zoom conferences, which, you know, don't get me wrong, I love the fact that, and most of them have been to colleges. So it's really cool to have those conversations with the front end of the profession. I enjoy having the conversation with the professionals as well. So some normalcy will be great. We're probably gonna have a couple of new board members. And I know Mr. Barter, he comes off this year because of he served back to back. You can't serve more than two terms. So he comes off, and we have one of our public members who was the 2-year public member. I don't know. Her seat comes up. I don't know if she's going to put back in or not, but you know, it's interesting to see where things are headed.
You bet. Yep, it is definitely an odd time. And you're right, the outreach, while the communication still can work over video, it's just not the same. I mean, whether it's board meetings, whether it's outreach, whatever, it's just not the same. We make do with what we've got, but it'll be nice to get back to some semblance of normalcy.
I'm just ready to go stay in a hotel room again, honestly.
Yes, between hotel rooms and air flying again, I'm ready to do that myself.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
Yep. Last question I've got for you, and it's not survey related. I've got to ask. You're Alabama, so is it Alabama or is it Auburn?
Tennessee.
Oh.
No, here's the thing. So
threw me for a loop.
Yeah, I did actually. And, well, Troy, because that's where a lot of my parents' money went. But so here's the thing. I grew up an Auburn fan. My grandparents, they sent a lot of money to Auburn University over the years. And we went to a bunch of Auburn games over the years. That was my Saturdays growing up until they took me to a game in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I heard 102,000 of my best friends singing "Old Rocky Top," and I'm like, "That's it."
Okay.
So now, granted, you don't hear many out Tennessee fans this season because God knows they're terrible. Not as bad as Vandy. We haven't fired our coach yet, but so we have that going on now. And I'm an Auburn fan too. I'll pull for Auburn, and am amply excited and waiting for them to fire their coach so we can go and make a dynamic hire and bring in someone that will, you know, compete with Alabama every year, because by God, I got friends and it's rough.
Yes, exactly. There was no way you were going to get off the hook through this conversation without asking about Alabama football. I mean, that's just part of the culture.
They could beat Cleveland this year. I'm relatively sure they could beat the Brady Buccaneers. I think they can go toe-to-toe with the Falcons. I'm actually a big fan of, like, the promotion and relegation with the NFL to the SEC.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
The best SEC team pop it up to the NFL for two seasons and take the worst NFL team, drop it down to the SEC, see how it shakes out. You know, Cleveland is screwed. Denver, until they get a quarterback, they're screwed. You know, it would be a lot of fun to see that. But, yeah, so I am an Auburn fan, but, you know, I pull for Tennessee, Troy, and Hawaii.
There you go. Very good.
Because, you know, everybody needs to pull for Hawaii.
Exactly. Well, there you have it, Mr. Griffin Pritchard from the Arizona Licensing Board. Alabama. You got me thrown off.
Come
Alabama.
On, man.
Alabama. Sorry about that. It's been a long day. Alabama Licensing Board, and I appreciate you taking some time and putting up with me for this conversation. Like I said, it's refreshing to hear it from a different perspective. We talk to surveyors, and we can drone on to ourselves, but it's nice to hear it from the other side of the profession, because you're on the licensure side. So it's nice to have your perspective.
Well, anytime you need me to come on and fill airspace or, you know, break the monotony, I'm around. You know how to find me.
There you go.
3 days a week, I'm in my office. 2 days a week, I'm from my house. Yeah.
And I do recommend, if you can get out there, in fact, if you don't mind, I'll post a link to The Standard, which is a very, very nice magazine from the Alabama board, and all full of Griffin's articles, and very, very well written. I really enjoyed it. I appreciate the hard work you put into all your writing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I love having this magazine. I love having this opportunity to, you know, interact with our community, because it's the great way to, like, make it more interesting when you put voices from within your own spectrum in there.
Well, and I tell you what, if you don't mind, I'd like to put you on a return track for maybe spring next year. Let's check back in with you, see how things are going once we're a little farther into our herd immunity and our vaccine, maybe, hopefully, and see how things are still going there in Alabama.
Absolutely. Just buzz me whenever.
All right. Well, I appreciate having you. And that'll wrap it up for me, Tim Birch, here on Surveyor Says. Kurt Sumner will be back with a couple more episodes. I think we've got some cool things coming up in the works. So stick around, and we'll have some stuff for you in the next few weeks. Thank you much.
You've been listening to the Surveyor Says podcast, brought to you by the National Society of Professional Surveyors. If you have any questions about today's episode or any other topic, please email us at info@nsps.us.com, and we are here to help. Visit our website, nsps.us.com, to learn more about our association, the programs we administer and support, our sustaining members, and information about future episodes of Surveyor Says. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as our podcast host, Podbean. And remember, it's a great day to be a surveyor.